to Dear Hank and John.
Nor as I prefer to think of it, Dear John and Hank.
It's a podcast where two brothers answer your questions, give you dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon. John, we were just having our Patreon live stream chat, which was great, and we talked a weird amount about yachts. I was remembering this time that I met a guy who told me that he had built 5 yachts in his life, super rich guy. And I was like, can you show me to them? And you show them to me? And he said, sure. And so he took me out to the docks and he was showing me and he said, this one's Un and this is Deux, this is Trois, this is Quatre. And then we kept going and there was no more boats. I said, well, where's the last one? And he said, sank. And I thought that was like really ironic, you know, that he named that boat sank.
He should have seen that one coming. Yeah. That's an error on his part.
Yeah. Well, if that was me, I just would have not mentioned the fifth boat, you know?
Right. I would have said I built 4 yachts, especially if I'm trying to sell them, you know? You don't want to say
he was trying to sell them to me.
I got a 20% success rate.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I didn't laugh harder. I don't feel very well. I'm sick. And I usually would have taken the week off. I have like a fever and a headache and just kind of cold symptoms. Usually I would have taken the week off, but I really needed to do the podcast today just for the news from AFC Wimbledon. So here I am.
Yeah, it is good. It is good. We didn't get it last week. We didn't even tell you that the first game of the season was coming up because Brennan didn't do enough research.
I woke up, this morning and I was like, oh God, I had such a bad night of sleep, just tossing and turning and sweating. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh God, I just want to spend today in bed. But then I had to ask myself, would Jack Curry spend today in bed? Would okay, AFC Wimbledon manager Johnny Jackson spend the day in bed?
We'll get there. But first, our last episode was guest hosted by Brennan Lee Mulligan, which I thought was an absolute joy. He was one of my top people I'd want to guest host.
Oh, yeah. You're a massive Brennan Lee Mulligan fan, as am I.
I am. And so I wanted to ask you, do you have... Who would be like your ideal? We've got Ryan Reynolds.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Brennan Lee Mulligan. We've got a few people over the years.
One of my favorite all-time... Two of my favorite all-time Dear Hank and John co-hosts are Danielle Bainbridge and Ashley Ford. I would love to have either of them back anytime. I enjoy the heck out of them. But I'll tell you the truth, Hank. If I could have anybody could co-host this podcast with me, I would pick Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow author Gabrielle Zevin. I'm just such a fan of hers. I just love that book so much. I still think about it all the time.
It's very good. It's very good. Is she on Twitter?
No, but we're friends. I've known her for a long time.
Oh, okay.
Her first book.
That's the only way I know to know people.
You know who else I would love to have sometime?
Who?
John Cena.
Oh, John Cena! Rock is on my list. Yeah,
The Rock would be great, but for me it'd be John Cena because I think we've talked about this before. How I have a recurring dream when I'm having like a really dark time.
Yeah,
I have this wonderful recurring dream where John Cena comes and whips me into shape and takes me to a special training camp for depressed people and teaches me how to like love the world again while also getting my head back into my body. And it's just amazing. And I just want to I want to meet John Cena one time and say, listen, man, I know this is my subconscious doing this and that you're not in any way participating.
Yeah.
But well, you are maybe the most important celebrity in my life because you come to me in my dreams when I need you the most.
Yeah, as long as we're having getting really off the beaten path into unattainable territory. I feel like John Cena is there's like a 2% chance we can get him on the podcast, but I want to get down below 1 with Jay-Z. I think that would be a good podcast.
If we did a podcast with Jay-Z, the whole time it would just be me saying, like, being that Chris Farley character who's interviewing celebrities and is just like, do you remember that one time when, remember that one time in Diamonds from Sierra Leone where you said, I'm not a businessman, I'm a business, comma, man. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember when you said, Remember that one time when you said that you were photo shoot fresh, looking like wealth, and you were about to call the paparazzi on yourself? Oh, God. How do you do it? Every single time I dress up at all, I look in the mirror and I think, photo shoot fresh, looking like
photo
wealth.
Shoot fresh.
About to call the paparazzi on myself.
Remember that time when you said, I'm a hustler, baby. I'll sell water to a well. If anybody has ideas for people we should have on as guest hosts, we'd love to hear your ideas. Because, look, we recently realized that a bunch of people listen to this podcast. We didn't.
Oh, yeah.
Hank and I, in a few years.
Hank and I hadn't looked at listener data in 3 years. And we kind of figured that we were making this mostly for ourselves. And we were a little confused why people kept sponsoring it, you know? Like, how are we holding on to all these sponsors when there's like 14 people listening? And it turns out there's a lot of you. And it's possible we've been undercharging.
So we have a hit podcast on our hands, it turns out. Are there any people you think would want to be on our hit podcast to promote their movie who's named Keanu Reeves?
Oh, God. I couldn't know. It would be too much. It would be.
I couldn't actually handle that. Yeah,
I couldn't handle it. I would spend the 6 weeks before Keanu was on the podcast just in a constant state of anxiety.
Yeah, I was kind of nervous about Ryan, but
yeah, me too.
Turns out, normal people are normal.
Hank, let's move on to some questions from our listeners. This one comes from Darby, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, how do you share what you've written without worrying your loved ones? I have a lot of writing, stories, poems, but I haven't shared most of them because I want the people I'm closest to enjoy them, but I also want the stories to be read separately from their author." Oh, Darby, you're speaking my language.
I mean, you particularly found like one of John's main talking points, which unfortunately is a main talking point because it is counter to the experience of most.
I can't get out of it. Yeah. I'm stuck inside of those novels no matter what I try to do.
Yes.
No matter how many times I tell people, please stop reading me into the novels. They can't. Well, yeah, they can't help themselves.
I experience this from the perspective of having a number of sort of excellent people in the books, but everyone assuming that Andy Scamped is the self-insert Hank. And I'm like, I guess that makes sense, but these other people are much cooler than that guy. Why did you make him me? Because I'm not cool, is why.
Right, that's why. I'm proud of what I've written, but I'm still struggling with showcasing my work because ultimately they're intimate glimpses into my mind. What do you think? Tell all the truth, but tell it slant. Darby.
I don't know.
I don't know, Darby.
Strangers. You gotta find strangers.
But even then, it's hard, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, obviously, I don't know what it's like to be you, Darby, but the other day I was having dinner with a friend of mine and his dad, and his dad had just read The Anthropocene Reviewed, and he was like, you're a real tortured guy. It's like, I guess so.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it like that before, but I guess. Thanks.
I wanted to be like, aren't we all?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Are you just sort of at peace? Did you figure it all out?
Yeah, maybe, which is great. But I think that with The Anthropocene Reviewed, I felt like I can't escape being me in these novels. Like, I can't escape being read into them. I can't escape being a character in them,
sure,
even if I try not to be.
I mean, you are a character in The Anthropocene Reviewed.
And so that's what I did. I was like, fine.
Right. Okay.
I will make myself a character.
Yeah.
And I will at least have some control over how that character is represented.
It will at least just like be me stuff, not like,
right,
like
instead
John
of it being imagined that Hank is Andy.
Yeah.
And so everything that Andy does is like retroactively placed onto Hank. And like, I have tried, and I know you have too, to like create that distance consciously, but it's very hard when a lovely group of people interact with you and your work on a weekly basis or on a daily basis on Twitter or TikTok or whatever. Because you're always going to show glimpses of yourself that are some of the same glimpses or analogous glimpses to the glimpses you show of yourself in fiction.
Yeah.
And this was not really an issue except for in like scholarship, except in academia or in the case of like close friends, family members.
Yeah.
Until pretty recently, right? Because we all read J.D. Salinger in To Catch Her in the Rye. But the reason we read J.D. Salinger in To Catch Her in the Rye was because he was so overwhelmed by the response to Catcher in the Rye that he removed himself from public life and stopped publishing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because he did something so dramatic.
It's hard not to.
Yeah.
But now everybody is in that J.D. Salinger position where inevitably you become a central part of the narrative around the story or the poem or whatever.
Yeah, I think all the time about what I knew about my favorite authors when I read their books growing up. And it was just the author bio. Like what else could I know? I could go to the library and find a magazine interview maybe with them if I was nuts. But no, you just get you get three sentences in the back of the book. That's what you know. And so the book, I think, the work tended to in the past stand much more on its own. But this is probably a bit of a different question here, where it's particularly the people in my life reading this story in which the characters experience trauma or they are dealing with difficult things, seeing like being afraid that, regardless of how true this is, that people will read that book and come away not thinking about the book as the work, but thinking about you as the author and whether or not they need to be worried or concerned about that.
Right.
So that's very hard. And I think that it in a lot of ways you kind of can't do it. And I had to work really hard not to think about particularly my parents when I was writing, because I wanted to not be stuck in a world where, I had to be thinking of the audience that I wanted, not the audience that I was most worried about, I guess.
Right. Yeah, that's a great observation. In general, that's really good advice, I think. I also think you can go to your parents or friends and before they read it, say, listen, this is a story and it's got connections to my life, but it's not my life. Mm-hmm. And that's how stories work for me. And I know it will be hard to read it that way, but that's how it was written.
Yeah. Right. And I'm fine. I'm not fine, but I'm fine.
Right.
Nobody's fine.
Yeah. And this is the part of what makes this so complicated is that this is an impossible ask, right? It is an impossible ask to ask people hey, don't read what you know about the author into the book. That's just not possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's I really want you to read this. My friend Jeff wrote it.
but
you have to read it. I know you don't care about Jeff or no Jeff, but you have to read this and you have to be honest about what you think.
Well, and that's the other thing, right? Is that if you really wanted to, that's what you would do if you didn't want them to know that it was you.
Well,
or you would find some way to do that, just as you could have published your book under a pseudonym and then mom and dad might never have known that it was yours. But you want them to read it and you want them to know that you wrote it.
Yeah.
And so all of these conflicting, difficult things are happening all together. And that's why I don't think there's an easy or straightforward way around the question. And that's why, you're right, it has begun to obsess me. Because the questions that really interest me are the ones that don't have easy, straightforward, simple answers. For years, I was able to say books belong to their readers. And now I'm a little bit books belong to their readers. But...
Right. It is complex. Back in the day, they solved that problem by just saying that God wrote it.
Oh, those were the days when John Milton could be you know how it is, man. A little angel bird appeared on my shoulder and whispered all of Paradise Lost into my ear, and I just wrote it down. So don't read me into it. Blame the bird.
The muses. This next question comes from Audra, who says, sup? Right, we're going informal. It's in all caps. Is the earth not round? For my entire life, I thought the earth was perfectly round, and it's not. Are all the planets not perfectly circular? Does that change things? Thanks, Audra.
Audra, I've got really bad news.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
What's the bad news?
Nothing. Nothing. Nothing is perfectly round.
Yeah, well, except the idea of round, which is wild.
Right. Right. There is an idea of round that exists and that is real, and we can write equations about it to express this idea of round, and we can write sentences about it to express this idea.
The fact that you can do it in a sentence is the weird thing. Like, you can't draw a perfect circle, but you can say it's a line, all points of which are the same distance from the middle. And then, like, that is more of a circle than anything that has ever been created. And it has no circles in it.
That's mind-blowing. Nothing is round, Audra, except for sentences describing roundness.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so you've got a couple of different ways in which the Earth is not round. You've always been familiar with one of them, which is that sometimes the Earth goes up and then down, and you get tired when you're walking up the Earth, and then you can sort of, like, run down it. Or, like, ski down it. So that's a weird way.
You've got young person knees.
So that's a way to run that the Earth is not perfectly round. It has bumps, but it is also because it's spinning is a little bit of has a bulge in the middle where it's, like, literally because of the spin is squished out a little bit, about 70,000 feet wider across at the diameter than it is at the poles, which is a lot, a weird weird amount. And that also happens to the atmosphere. So it's not like that, like, pokes through the atmosphere, but it's further from the center of the planet, about 70,000 feet. Yeah.
Makes me feel better about my shape.
God. I hadn't thought about it that way. But this for this reason...
Just because of the spinning, I'm just a little wider in the middle.
For this reason, the Mount Everest is not actually the furthest point from the center of the Earth. It is the highest mountain, but the furthest point from the center of the Earth is, I think, in Ecuador or somewhere around there. It's a mountain that's closer to the equator.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. That's fascinating.
Did I give you a good fact? There's like several ways in which Mount Everest isn't the tallest planet. The other one is that Mauna Kea is the highest from the base to the top. It's just that the base is underwater. Nothing's ever simple. Just like the fact that nothing is round.
Yes, nothing is round except that words make it so, and nothing is simple except that words make it so. This next question comes Andrew. Who writes, Dear John and Hank, how am I supposed to hear about food recalls? I heard about this peanut butter recall on your podcast.
Oh, no. I haven't been feeling great lately.
Should I have a news alert set up or something? What's going on with these food recalls? DFTBA, Andrew.
I think that this is, like, literally the way that they do it is they just, like, put out a press release, and all the news organizations are like, okay, today we're going to do something constructive. We're going to let people know about a thing they didn't know about that's actually something they need to know about. And that's...
Right. I think that's the main way it happens.
Yeah.
But Andrew is right that if you don't engage with lots of traditional, like, television-based media sources... Right. You might not know about them, and, like, I would argue that not engaging with television news might be the right call.
Yeah, it's
that, outside of poisoned peanut
this
butter.
This is super weird that you have to consume some form of news that is going to contain probably a lot of stuff that's not going to be, you know,
great for you,
the right vibe anyway, in order to be aware of when your food might kill you, which. Maybe there should be an app for that. There's probably an app for that.
I would set up a Google News alert, but only for the things that I eat a lot of.
Mm-hmm.
Like Potbelly's turkey sandwich news alert. You know, if there's any big news coming out of the world of pot bellies, I want to know about it. Black beans and or rice. If there any issues emerge in those fields, I'm in a proper emergency.
Oh man.
But like John, I don't need one for iceberg lettuce.
Yeah, and they often are for iceberg lettuce, which is interesting.
They are.
We're not doing iceberg lettuce well. Well, in 2017, the USDA launched what this article calls a handy-dandy app called Foodkeeper that alerts people to food recalls the moment they are announced by the USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service and the FDA. So you will always be in the loop. It's called Foodkeeper. It's one word. And the K is capital, and it's also available on the internet.
There you go. Just go to Foodkeeper.
Foodkeeper. I can't believe
it. Great job by the USDA once again.
I thought we were going to be goofing. Turns out the USDA had obviated the problem. They had seen it, and they'd solved it, and they're amazing.
Obviated?
It's one of my favorites, John.
What's it mean?
That's just to remove a difficulty.
Obviated. Oh, God, I'd like to obviate several aspects of my life. Now that I have language for this, most of my issues are around obviation and the lack of it.
I don't really know how it's different from, like, avoid, but it feels like it's maybe a little bit more sort of permanent.
It's like what I think of is you're racing this 110 meter hurdles race, but then if you obviate the obstacles, you can go much faster.
Yeah, you don't have to jump at all. Yeah. So it's like you see the problem coming and you create the solution and then you've obviated.
I'll tell you the truth. It sounds like a business word, but I think if we could get it out of business and like into regular words, that would be good news.
I might know it for business reasons. Sometimes I sit in meetings and I hear the business words flying around and I'm like, this is terrible. But then I'm like, but also very efficient. Like I know what they mean.
Totally. Yeah. And it used to be like Hank and I would go to business meetings and people would say business words and you could see Hank and I like blanch and roll our eyes and fake barfing sounds.
The other
and
thing
stuff.
That I've gotten good at is being like, I don't know that one, which initially it felt very bad to be like, I don't have any idea what we're talking about right now.
I think that you said the word CAC 400 times before I knew what it meant.
CAC is very important.
It is. It's very important. I just didn't know what it was.
Yeah. Yeah. I did this in a meeting last week. I was like, everybody said this 3 or 4 times and I don't know what it is. And then several people were like, yes, me too. And I was like, see, we need to speak with each other.
What was it?
I can't remember. It was something to do with higher education. It was in a meeting with, it was a crash course thing.
Oh, yeah.
They have so many acronyms in the higher ed world.
Oh, God. Sorry, I'm giving myself a COVID test, Hank. Don't mind me.
This is actually a tab I have open right now. You can reserve your spot for a white glove landing page service fully supportive of your AOV, ROA, and CPA goals.
Wow. Wow.
And I just read that like words. I'm so old.
Yeah. White glove needs to go. I mean, that needs to go.
Yeah. I haven't received a white glove service in real life ever, and I don't want one.
Yeah. Let's move on. This next question comes from Laura, who writes, Dear John and Hank, what would have happened if the earth never had trees that could be used for lumber or structures? Mm. Like, say they just never grew or evolved and we just had shrubbery. Would we have been able to figure out boats and stuff? Mm. Would we be different? Wondering about the big flora. Laura. Wow. Really good name. Specific sign off.
Yeah. I think we would have figured out boats, but it definitely would have taken longer. Everything would have taken longer. Trees are so good. You also have to think, you know, that you can still burn the shrubbery, like you can do fires, but like it's just a lot more work to maintain a fire that has a lot of little bits in it than like big bits. So I would that's also be, a thing?
I would also be worried that we couldn't have the climate that we have that's allowed us to thrive without trees.
That, sure. I think that that could be also be a problem. The shade as well, I love that. And wouldn't
oh yeah
to not have that.
I mean, if there were no trees, I don't know if yeah. there had never been a tree, mm-hmm. I don't think that there would be humans at all.
You think there would be no people? You think people are impossible without trees? I don't think that's true.
I'm not saying that they're impossible. I'm just saying that, like, I don't think apes would have been crushing it 30 million years ago.
I get where you're at.
I'm concerned that there might not be humans.
Yeah. The woodless world, human free. It's my new novel.
The woodless world is a really good name for a novel. I don't know what it's about.
Yeah, or a coffee like a brew.
Oh yeah, no, it's a little kind of
a bummer. Fun coffee. Yeah.
Given that we're trying with the Awesome Coffee Club to make deforestation not happen, the woodless world seems like the wrong name for the coffee. But that does remind me, Hank.
Oh,
last week we made a big deal, or 2 weeks ago, we made a big deal of the fact that you could go to awesomecoffeeclub.com really and get a sweet, sweet discount by putting in Dear Hank or Dear John in the promo code. And then Hank and I were looking at the stats and we were like, this is a catastrophe.
This is
the worst promotion we've ever done. It's gotten a total of like two purchases. And that was because you couldn't actually buy the coffee with those discounts. You could only buy a mug. And that's on us.
Yeah.
We're sorry.
We got reached out to by somebody at DFTBA and they were like, do you want me to make that so that that works?
And they did. They did make it so that it works. Yeah. So if you go to awesomecoffeeclub.com right now, you can get great coffee sent to your house on a regular schedule and get 2 cents off. Awesomecoffeeclub.com, promo code Dear John.
Or Dear Hank.
Sure. All right. It looks like I don't have COVID again, even though I sure do have a fever.
Well, it turns out there are other diseases.
I guess so.
This next question comes from Caleb, who asks, Dear Hank and John, why are the planets close to the sun small and rocky, and why are the planets far from the sun huge and gassy? Is it like this in every solar system? Are the big ones just rock ones down at their core? Help, I need this info for a trip I'm planning. Caleb.
You and Elon Musk, buddy. You and Elon Musk. Planning the trip since 2004. Yeah, Hank, is that real?
That is certainly the case in our solar system. It is not universal, though. There are lots of what they call hot Jupiters, which are big gas giants that orbit close into their stars. We have a lot to learn about planetary formation and about other planetary systems. And one of the things that is the problem here, and I want to write a SciShow about this, is that we have a bunch of tools for how to detect planets, but they detect certain planets. So, like, for example, there's like the wobble method where you can actually see the star wobble a little bit as the planets orbit it. But in order to see that wobble, you have, like, the planet has to be close and it has to be big. So we have a really good system for detecting certain kinds of planets. So we know about a lot of hot Jupiters, but that doesn't mean that they're common. It means that we can detect them. And I think oftentimes when science journalists write about this, they're like, why are there so many hot Jupiters? And it's like, well, maybe there aren't. It's just that, like, we're good at detecting them right now. So that there's a sampling bias.
Right.
And this is also true for planets that are closer versus farther away. So there's the transit method is how we know about most exoplanets, which is when a planet passes in front of the star and the brightness of the star drops. And that,
right.
But in order for that to happen, the planet has to be perfectly aligned with us looking at it, with its star, because it could, you know, there's no like, planetary systems don't like orbit in the galactic plane or anything. They're totally
They don't
random.
Have like an up and down.
They tumble around. So It's totally random whether or not you can see that, and it's actually quite unlikely. But also, if there's just a little bit of tilt, the close ones might be transiting, but the far ones won't be. So it's harder to see planets that are farther away. It's also easier to see planets that are bigger because they block more light when you're talking about the transit method. So closer in, bigger planets are much easier to detect than farther out, smaller planets. So our understanding, like, we have detected a huge number of exoplanets, but we are not particularly good at like, we haven't gotten, there's like gaps in what we can detect. And so we are still working on, filling in those gaps with better sensors and better systems. So we don't really know.
Hold on, I'm not near the mic. I just realized that's an important part of making the podcast. And so we don't really know what percentage of exoplanets we've discovered. Like, we aren't able to, like, extrapolate out very effectively.
We can extrapolate some things, but there are big gaps in what we can extrapolate.
Okay.
Yeah. We do, there are a couple of things that make us believe that solar systems like ours, where the inner planets are rocky and the outer planets are gaseous, are not weird, and that often happens, and that there are physical reasons why this happens. So one of the big ones is that, like, for gas to clump together, it helps for it to be cold, because you can sort of, like, get past what they call the frost line, where hydrogen can compound into ice, which makes it sort of bump into each other more, which makes it easier for it to form into a planet rather than just keep getting like pushed farther out by the solar winds. Whereas the heavier elements that the terrestrial planets are made out of, they are able to condense at higher temperatures closer into the star. So it appears that there is a logic, like, there's a reasonable explanation for why the inner planets of our solar system are rocky and the outer planets are gaseous. And that in these situations where there are these, like, close-in gas giants, that might be a situation where it is not unusual for like, planets to form and then, like, rearrange themselves in a solar system. And sometimes they end up going in close, maybe. Yeah.
Well, all of that reminds me that today's podcast is brought to you by Hot Jupiters.
That's it. That's a good
Hot
coffee name.
Hot Jupiters. A good coffee name.
This podcast is also brought to you by Mount Chimborazo, the furthest point from the equator of our planet. Take that, all you Everest climbers.
And today's podcast is brought to you by A Woodless World. A Woodless World. It's a great phrase, but it wouldn't be a great world.
And of course, this podcast is brought to you by The Yacht Sank. works both ways.
That's the joke. We also have a Project for Awesome message from Roland in the Netherlands to Hilda. It's exactly 10 years ago when we met at John's Tiffios reading in Amsterdam.
Oh, wow.
The Dutch Nerdfighter community brought us together, and now 10 years later, we are married and expecting our Nerdfighter baby girl. Oh my God, I might start crying. I've had an emotional day. I have no doubt that you're going to be an amazing mom because you never forget to be awesome. Without you, my life would be a lot less colorful. Love, Roland. P.S. We have a baby gift list here. Fine. Fine, Roland. You're going to make me cry. You get. I'll buy you a stroller.
Are we too late? Because it got submitted a long time ago.
Oh, God. We are too late. Oh, no.
I got something. I got stuff.
Oh, wait. There's a password. There's a password.
There's a password. Yeah. You didn't notice the password? No. I don't speak Dutch, though, so I'm confused.
Oh, yeah. They need a blender, and they need one of those little swaddling things.
Which is called, apparently, a bad cape.
A bad cape. Do you think they accept just money? Whatever. We'll work it out, Roland. Hank.
That's definitely what that is. A Kinderstuhl.
A Kinderstuhl.
It's a child stool. And a bad cape.
Yeah.
And a slap sack.
And a slap sack.
Do you know what a slap sack is, John?
I do now.
It's like a onesie. Stop looking, and I'm gonna read you Dutch baby things and tell you. You're gonna see if you know what they are. What is a hoedje?
Oh. Well, so it's bad pronunciation.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I do not know.
Hoedje.
Okay, is it a little baby shoes?
The first part is hood. What part of a baby might a hood be?
Is it a little baby hoodie? Little hoodie for
That's
babies.
Close. It's a bucket
hat. Is it a
hat?
Is it a baby hat?
Yes, the baby hat. It looks like a bucket hat that like the cool kids wear. What about a Beats Beetle?
Oh, a Beats Beetle is definitely a crib.
No, it's got the word speet in it.
It's a place where the babies spit.
It's a tooth. It's a teething device.
Oh, Beats Beetle.
Yeah,
sure.
It's a Beats Beetle.
Yeah. God, I love Dutch.
It's good.
I've got one for you, Hank.
Uh-huh.
What do you think a blender is? It's a blender.
I think it's probably a blender. Yeah.
Oh, it is so one of the great, great pleasures of having done this for so long. I remember that Fault in Our Stars gathering 10 years ago. And one of the great pleasures of having done this for so long is getting to see relationships grow and deepen among people who are in our community. And hearing that is just, it's just so special. So thank you.
Thank you
for letting us be part of your lives. Thank you for giving us a seat at the table. And thank you for making relationships with each other. It's amazing.
What do you think Modermilk Bewarzakjes is? Moder milk.
I mean, it's mother's milk.
Uh-huh.
Is it a bottle?
Yeah, like bags.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Like breast milk bags?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Moder milk.
Yeah. Moder milk. I love Dutch.
Love Dutch.
Hank.
What?
Hank.
What?
Hank.
What?
Hank. AFC Wimbledon played a football game.
Oh.
our first game in the fourth tier of English football in a number of years since we got relegated last year. And you'll recall why we got relegated, Hank. There were two main reasons.
Yeah.
One was that after December 8th, we did not win a game. So we went 28 games.
Which is a lot of the season.
It's most of the season.
That's not
We
good.
Went 28 games without a victory. It's not good.
No.
Very well put.
You can't really win if you don't win. That's what they say.
If you don't win any football games, it is unlikely that you will succeed in football.
Mm.
That is one of the basic rules of sports. Do you want to know how many days it was? It was 8 months, Hank. It was 8 months without winning a football game. It was 235 days that Wimbledon fans went to Plough Lane hoping to see their team win, only to not see them win. Well, our first season back in League Two has just begun, and I was like, oh, God, I don't know. We've made all these signings. We've got a really high quality players now, but we don't win football games. I don't even remember what it's like to win a football game. And we were playing Gillingham, or possibly Gillingham, whom you'll recall were also relegated from League One. So they're probably one of the best teams in League Two since they were, you know,
in League One recently.
They were better than us last year.
Yep.
And so I was like, oh God, this just, it's so high pressure. Well, Hank, I have not seen us look that good on a football field in years. Johnny Jackson, our manager, has Wimbledon playing a really attractive kind of football, defending well, but then going forward. And there's this kid who's one of our fullbacks. His name's Jack Curry. He's been with Wimbledon since he was 12 years old. He's just been promoted to the senior team. He was playing his first game of professional football in his young life.
Mm-hmm.
In front of the fans who've watched him grow up since he was in fifth grade, or whatever they call it in England. And not only did he have an amazing game, he scored a goal. He scored a goal in our 2-0 victory over Gillingham, or possibly Gillingham, and it was the most beautiful. It was so beautiful. You could see the tears rush to his eyes as he scored the goal, and all the players surrounded him. He was named man of the match. Is just incredible. We won a football game for the first time in 8 months, for the first time in 2022. We won a football game. Christmas was 2 weeks away the last time we won a football game. And we won a football game. The other goal was scored by Ethan Chislett, also a longtime Don. And it was an absolute rocket from outside of the box. It was like a Premier League level goal. It was incredible. And I mean, obviously, it's one game out of a 46-game season. But, oh, I could not help but hope. I cannot help but hope, Hank, we look a lot better than we did last year. And some of our best players weren't even on the pitch yet. We got this new midfielder. His name is Paris Magoma. And he is really good. Like, he looked very, very talented. We also just signed somebody whose initials are NYC. And that's what he goes by. He goes by NYC, even though he's not from New York. And he looks good. Young Nathan Hoobity Watts Combs. Mm. He looks very good. Mm. So I'm full of, we won a football game.
So far, if all goes like this, you're going to win all of them.
That's right. We're on pace to have the greatest season in League Two history.
It's still possible.
The other thing is that the AFC Wimbledon kits came out, and the away kit is a really dark blue, and the patch, the DFTBA Nerdfighteria patch, is gold, and it looks so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can I get one of these? Can I buy one of these for those people's baby?
You can. You buy the shorts, and then you have to buy the patch separately.
Oh, you have to buy the, buy the patch separately.
I don't know. Go to afcwimbledon.co.uk and you can figure it out. Listen, it's a fourth tier English football team, Hank. They don't have the best like international clothing options, but you can make it happen.
Okay. That's great. Well, I'm very glad. Were you watching the game? Did you get to see it?
I watched the whole game. And oh God, it was just such a joy. It was such a relief. You know, it just felt great. I had genuinely forgotten what it was like to win. And so the whole time we were 1-0 up, because we scored in the 14th minute, and I was like, that's way too early.
Yeah.
I've seen this movie before. Then when Jack Curry scored that second goal, I was like, maybe this is different. Maybe it's different. Like, we kept a clean sheet. We scored a couple goals. The players looked really promising.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was feeling good, man. I'm feeling good. What's going on Mars?
Well, on Mars, I can't figure out how to buy things from this baby website in the Netherlands. And so instead, I'm buying myself an adult away walkout jacket from the AFC Wimbledon store.
They're beautiful.
They do look good. This week in Mars news. So the plan has always been, and this is always, it's just been a plan, is that the Perseverance rover is taking rock samples and then it's just like dropping them on the surface of Mars. It's saying, here they are, come get them later. And then the idea is that eventually something will come get them later. The problem is that as this plan continued for the European Space Agency to design the rover that would pick up the tubes and then like the rocket that would then launch into Mars's orbit and then get them back to Earth somehow, became very expensive and cumbersome. And so now NASA is saying, okay, let's not send a separate rover just to pick up vials of rock and dirt. Maybe we will get the Perseverance to do it for us since it's already there. And also Curiosity has been so tremendously successful and long-lived, it may have time to do this. And which means that potentially it will do that work, and then there will be just one lander instead of two, one with a rover and one with a rocket, where the rocket could, the Perseverance would like give it to the rocket and be like, here, buddy, take it home. And if all of that works, Earth might be getting its first delivery of Mars rocks around 2023.
That's pretty soon.
It's pretty soon.
Wait, next year?
Sorry. And if all of this works, Earth will be getting its first delivery of Mars rocks by around 2033, which is not great for like my schedule for when people need to get to Mars. We make it. Hopefully, we'll get rocks after we get people there and back, which would make the whole thing. If we are able to sort of figure out rockets the way that people who talk big think that we can, then all this will have been for naught, and we'll just have people coming back from Mars with just tons of rocks.
Yeah.
But seems unlikely at this point.
I mean, we are now only 5 years away from this podcast getting renamed. It's starting to seem like it could happen.
Well, first, the thing that it mainly makes me think is when we made that joke, I was like, that's an impossible distance away.
Right.
Because 2028 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's just so, it's just infinite future.
Right.
And now it's like, oh yeah, no, we're going to get there.
Yeah, we're going to get there. I think it's pretty likely that we'll be making a podcast then, especially now that I know that we have listeners.
Yeah. And thanks. I'm glad that we do have listeners. And I'm glad that I have a brother to make podcasts with me, even if, you know, if you're not able to show up and Keanu Reeves wants to come on instead, that's also totally acceptable.
If I'm not able to show up and Keanu Reeves comes on instead, I will be showing up.
Yes. That would be an awful shame for you, but just a complete delight for me to rub it in your face forever. So that's my hope. If you want to ask us questions, you can do that. HankandJohn@gmail.com is the email address to send them to. Thank you all so much for your delightful questions. We're off to record our Patreon-only podcast. It's called This Week in Stuff, where we talk about the things that made us happy this week. And I hope I have something to say. It's been a little bit of a stressful time for me, honestly, John.
But yeah, maybe we'll just talk about things that are making us miserable, like illness.
Yeah. This podcast is edited by Joseph Tuna Medish. It's produced by Rosianna Hals-Rojas. We want to say a thank you to Julia Bloom, who has been our communications coordinator for ever so long. Julia is headed off to do new and cool and big and exciting new things, but you will be missed, Julia. Hats off. Thank you for all of your hard work. Our editorial assistant is Debuki Chakravarti. The music you're hearing now is by the great Gunnarolla. And as they say in our hometown, don't forget to be awesome.